Welcome back to Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. This episode was made possible by our patrons. Thank you to everyone who supports us. If you are interested in supporting the podcast monetarily, please check us out at patreon.com/pathtoglory. If that's not possible, we still appreciate the listens and the ratings. You know, we're just overwhelmed by the amount of support we get from the community, so thank you. Now, as always, this is Amon Kusro, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jonathan Davis.
Hello.
How are you?
Doing well, yeah.
Good, good. Well, today is our special review of the Dread Pageant Warband. Earlier, we did the Dire Chasm overview, which was a lot of goodies in there, and then we did Miari's Purifiers.
Yeah.
So, as naturally, we're going to jump to, I guess, the darker side of the box, depending on your point of view. But I wanted to go ahead and jump into that. But before we do, Jonathan's got a bit of brief housekeeping for us.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that if you are listening to this before Saturday the 19th, please consider playing in the Straight Out of Shadespire Cam Game Tournament. This is the 10th one. I think I've played in 3 or 4 of them. They've been a lot of fun. The event is at 2 p.m. CET, which is 7 a.m. in Texas. And I think 1 p.m. in the UK. So check out the Discord, the link in our Discord for more information. And I hope more people play. They are a lot of fun.
Yeah, shout out to Val, who organizes those events. And I've yet to join one, but they look a lot of fun, and I love hearing the stories about them. Waking up at 7 a.m. on a Saturday is a challenge for me personally.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. Maybe one day I will show up.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention was I've started posting recordings of some of my cam games on the Patreon. So if you'd like to view those, you can. I've been playing a lot of Lady Harrows recently, and I've uploaded 5 of the games with them so far. So if you're interested in that, check it out.
Look at you, you power gamer.
I know. I had today off, so I got a lot of games in and got a lot of stuff done. So.
I did want to mention that your mic sounds a little further away than usual. So I don't know if you're doing something different, but
I don't think so. I can try to move a little closer.
Sure, sure. Just sounds different to me. It might not affect the episode, but figured I'd give you a shout.
Okay. The last thing that I had is stick around for the end phase of today's episode. This is the Patreon-only segment. And today's end phase is going to be a chat on the topic of when to throw away your starting hand. So,
yeah, this was actually brought upon by a question by one of our patrons, who's also Val, the organizer of Straight Out of Shadespire. And, you know, we really thought about it, and Jonathan was quite keen to talk about it. And I agree. I think it's a really good topic, and I hope that our patrons enjoy it. If you're not familiar with the end phase, it's a special mini episode that we do after some of our bigger episodes where we talk about certain topics that are relevant to the game and maybe to the topic at hand. Today, it's more of a general topic, but it's a small thank you to our patrons who truly support us and help us keep going with the new website and, you know, the podcast and things like that. So thank you. And if you're interested, again, you can check us out at patreon.com/pathtoglory.
Absolutely.
Alrighty, well, into the meat of the segment today, Dread Pageant Review. But before we do that, I found the lore for these guys to be quite interesting. So I'll be sharing anecdotes along the way. Max Bernstein, if you're listening, this one's for you because I listened to your episode recently and you didn't even know the Beast Grave was a mountain. that upset me a little bit, I'm not going to lie, but this one's for you, bud. So the Dread Pageant. Having first entered Beastgrave in pursuit of visions of their missing deity Slaanesh, the depraved mortals known as the Dread Pageant were soon gripped by a new obsession, the tormenting of the sentient mountain itself. Like all Slaaneshi head knights, the Dread Pageant are slaves to sensation, and when they first tasted Beastgrave's anguish at being denied its usual feast of flesh, they began to goad the mountain by withholding its sucker, torturing their victims to the point of death, while imbibing Beastgrave's despair. In the catastrophic depths of Dire Chasm, the mountain's raw emotions are at their most tangible, sending the Dread Pageant into a euphoric state. So pretty dire stuff, actually, not to be a bit on the nose, but that's Slaanesh for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting that they're able to kind of soak in the way the mountain's feeling, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting because I didn't realize, but I bought the book for Dire Chasm, which I'll be doing a review on that later. But it mentions that the Beastgrave itself is now suffering from the curse of the Cataphrine. So the Beastgrave is now eternally hungry because it can't feed off the people that die in its catacombs and chasms because they just keep coming back to life. So the mountain is actually suffering the most out of everyone. And the Slaanesh people are having a great time.
So yeah, that's really interesting because you can't even... Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, it's really hard to fathom that the mountain itself is, in a way, the most damaged bystander of all this, right? It just was trying to exist and eat people, and now it can't even do that.
Yeah.
So cool little lore segment there, but we'll be sharing more anecdotes again, as I mentioned earlier, but let's get into the actual mechanics of the warband. And so, Jonathan, do you want to share the Inspire?
Sure, yeah. So the Inspire condition is pretty interesting. I guess it's kind of like some of the ones we've seen before. Maybe kind of like Despoilers or something like that. But basically, you need to have 6 wound counters on the board at a time, which is interesting, or on fighter cards. So it says, after an activation, surviving fighters have 6 or more wound counters. This is probably one of the strangest Inspire conditions in the game, I think. What do you think about that?
I completely agree from a mechanical perspective. From a lore perspective, which I think is important, I think it's really cool because Slaanesh, in its own, there's this pain and pleasure aspect to it that it feeds off of. So, you know, despite the fact that they might be injured, there might be some sick pleasure surrounding it. And then, of course, when their enemies are hurting, it makes them... it excites them, maybe, and it feels good. And then 6 is the actually unholy number of Slaanesh. So I really like the theme behind it. In its application, I think it can be really challenging. But unlike a lot of other warbands where the Inspire is perhaps maybe supplementary, this is actually going to make you focus on the core deck design that you take with them. You have to take cards that can help trigger this, kind of like the Worm Spat in a way. Otherwise, it'll be very difficult to Inspire.
Yeah. I guess it's probably most like the Worm Spat in that respect. Yeah. I don't know why I said Despoilers. So, it's interesting. Like, the weird thing about it is that you actually don't want to kill enemy fighters a lot of the time. Or you'll be put in situations where you have to choose between killing an enemy fighter and hurting enemy fighters and inspiring. So I think it can be tricky. But importantly, it can be your fighters as well as theirs. So I think there are some tricks to help you do it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love how you mentioned your fighters as well, because, you know, we're in the realm of Gur. Lethal hexes are everywhere and insanely controllable as well. So you can actually take damage and receive damage as well as dish it out. And there's some really cool ways in which this warband can try to manipulate that. And so I guess... if you have nothing else to add, maybe let's jump into the fighters.
Well, I guess one technical thing I wanted to mention with the Inspire is it is after an activation. So unlike, say, the Worm Spat, you can't use ping damage in the power step and then Inspire right away before your activation, you know, and take advantage of more powerful stats. You can still ping damage and get to 6, but you still have to activate, or your opponent would have to activate before you'll Inspire. And interestingly, if... you know, you're at like 5 wounds into your opponent's activation, they can possibly take one of your fighters out of action that had wounds, or maybe even remove one of their fighters that had a wound and actually make it harder for you. So I think that's kind of interesting. The other thing is that it is after an activation. So if you have reactions that are doing damage, it's worth keeping in mind where those are taking place. If I guess Pit Trap is rotated out, but if you had something like Pit Trap, you would actually attack a fighter, hit them for some damage. And if that was six, you would then inspire. And then you would play Pit Trap because it's after the attack action. But something like Snare, which is during the attack action, you wouldn't. So just little things to keep in mind like that.
That's a really good point. And I really like the off the bat, you mentioned the ability for your opponent to counterplay. In some cases, they could kill off a fighter who has some wounds on their own to deny you an inspiration. And I think in some cases that may not be worth the case, but some of these fighters do gain quite a lot from inspiring. And so we'll get into those details there, but that's a very neat thought as well. And I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I think that's all I had though. Do you want to take the first fighter?
That's right. Yep, let's do it. So the first fighter is the leader. His name is Vasilak the Gifted. He's a deadly spearman whose supple body is covered with ritual scars. A little lore behind him is that he rose to lordship amongst the Godseekers, which are the people who are looking for Slaanesh. At a very young age, it's said that his plumed helm hides a youthful face set with a wicked smile. So he's a bit of a sadist, and I think that's quite on brand. I really like his model, too. He's got this piercing through his wrist, which is actually really painful, but it holds his cape up, which I thought is quite fascinating.
Yeah, form and function there, right?
Yeah. It's what do they say? You know, it hurts to look this good. So
Right.
But let's get into his stats. So looking at his fighter card, you know, they've got that global inspire that we mentioned. He's movement 4, 1 block, 4 wounds, which is awesome for a Chaos Lord type figure. And he's got an agonizing spear, so it's range 2, 2 damage, 2 smash. And he's got a reaction during this fighter's attack action after the deal damage step. So I want to clarify, the deal damage step only happens if your attack is successful. Yeah. Pick one, deal 1 damage to this fighter or heal 1 this fighter. And then when he inspires, he jumps to 5 movement. His spear goes to 3 damage and gains cleave, and everything else remains the same. What are your thoughts on the Gifted?
I think he is a fairly powerful leader. His uninspired stats are, I would say, they're solid. Once inspired, and particularly if you give him a lot of upgrades, I think he can be very, very scary. He's reminiscent of Skritch or the Briar Queen. The single block is not quite as good as the double dodge we see on some other fighters, but usually it's not the defense dice that are keeping him alive. It's going to be the health. So, you know, or the gambits in this case, they have some really good defensive gambits. So once he gets actualed up, and his heal can help a lot too. Yeah.
I think I really like the fact that he's 1 block because the starter set includes cards like Savage Speed and Savage Strength. Yep. And I think he's a great candidate for both of those. But this guy, you're right, is absolutely a monster. I played a game earlier today so I can brush up on my knowledge for these guys and played against Grimwatch, and he murdered more than half the warband by himself. Wow. That range too is amazing.
Yeah, and the reaction is really interesting. I don't know how often you use it. I would say you probably don't use it to deal damage to yourself unless it's make or break inspiring you. But the heal, I think, can be situationally quite powerful. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So cool. Well, do you want to cover the next fighter, Slake Slash?
Yeah. So the next fighter is Slake Slash, the Slangor. I would probably say he's the tank of the warband, but also can deal out some pretty good damage. The stats are 5 wounds, which is quite durable, 1 block, and 4 movement. Slake Slash has the same reaction as Vasilak does, so can choose to heal or deal damage to itself after a successful attack action. And Slake Slash also has the Hunter and Quarry keywords, which is pretty cool. I think this is the first fighter with Quarry. So,
yeah. I think that's probably one of the most unique aspects of this warband is they have an innate quarry. And I really like the idea of a lore behind it. You know, he's a demonic creature that is both terrifying and alluring at the same time due to his patronage, right? So
yeah,
in a way, he is attractive, not necessarily physically, but he can attract you towards him. And so you might believe that he is a quarry that you are seeking, but then, you know, if he decides to flip the switch on you, then he will hunt you down and mercilessly rip you to shreds with that giant claw. So,
yeah. And the attack is called Lethal Flurry. It's range 1, 3 fury, 2 damage. So that's a solid uninspired attack. Mm-hmm. And then the only thing that Slake Slash gains once inspired is another fury on the attack. So now it's 4, which is quite good. And then 5 movement, which is pretty nice as well.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I wouldn't say that he gains a lot, but...
Yeah, it's interesting. His uninspired attack profile is actually better than some warbands in general. Like, look at the crushes. They would love to hit on 3 fury off the bat, right? So, he's really cool. I think you're definitely right. He is the tank of the warband. He's supposed to probably be a little brawler and get bruised up, but then maybe, you know, he can dish out some damage as well. And you actually probably don't mind maybe inflicting a damage to yourself every once in a while to him. Because going to 5-4, while it is a big deal, early on in the game, you're probably not going to get one shot for 4 damage, unless, again, maybe Molog or crushes. But, you know, afterwards, once you've inspired, you can just heal him back up.
Yeah, and let's say somebody hits him for 2, then the difference between 3 and 2 health isn't really that much either. So you could probably ping yourself there if you wanted to as well. I think one of my favorite things about him is that because he starts out with 5 wounds, he's really good at holding those wound tokens to help you inspire. And I found that for the most part, if the opponent attacks Slake Slash, then you'll probably inspire because usually it's going to take at least 2 hits, maybe 3 to kill him. And they can't usually do that fast enough before you're able to, you know, put the wounds where you need them.
Absolutely. And I just do want to clarify that he can only use this reaction during his own attack action. So, just as a quick reminder to everyone, you can't take 2 damage and then deal a damage. You'd have to do it in the next activation. So,
yeah.
But it's still super cool. I really like it. And I think it's a beautiful model. He is bonded to Vasilak in some unspoken pact, which I think is pretty neat from a flavor perspective. And honestly, you never get tired of more Beastmen, man. And Slangor's, I think he's probably the best Beastman yet. Maybe Draknar, because he can deal so much damage, but I think I'll give it to Slake Slash.
I am with you on that one, yeah.
Kacharik is a close second, though.
That's true. I think Kacharik might be number 2 for me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how the Beastmen are better outside the warband than in it. But now we jump to Glissette. Glissette is a dazzling dancer. She's, in a way, again, attracting her opponents through her sinuous dance moves, but then killing them brutally. And so she's playing no games. So she's got a dazzling glaive. And again, I really like the idea of a spear. If you look at a lot of the Chaos Warriors in general, they all have kind of a quirk. You know, like Tzeentch loves magic. Khorne loves axes. And so in this situation, Slaanesh fight with spears a lot. And I really like that she's got a glaive, which is a pseudo spear. 2 range, 2 fury, 2 damage. So not very accurate. Same inspire. But this is where she gets really cool. Despite the fact that she only has 2 wounds, she's 4 movement, and she's on 2 dodge, which makes sense because she's kind of dancing around the whole time. And she's always on guard. So she's actually the hardest fighter to hit in that warband, period.
And in the game, I believe.
And in the game. Wow. Okay. Well, good. So when she inspires, if she makes it, because she's got a low health pool, her glaive goes to 3 fury, which is pretty decent. And then she gets a scything attack, which is range 1, 3 fury, but only 1 damage. So maybe she's there's not as enough weight behind the scything attack itself, but still, it's a nice option to have. And it's very neat because, again, I think if you want her to do a scything attack, she probably won't move because she's on guard all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, 1 damage isn't great, but 3 fury is actually really nice for a scything attack. And with 1 damage upgrade, this can be pretty scary to a lot of warbands. So I think the Whirling Glaive is like situationally a pretty good attack.
Agreed. So when playing Glissette, what is your mindset here? You know, I know that you've built a deck that heavily focuses on objectives. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've mentioned that you really like parking her on one because it's very hard for her to get off one. Is that your main strategy with her?
Yeah, initially, I think I was playing her a little bit more passively because of her low health. But in my experience, there'll be games when she'll just soak up the first three hits people throw at her. Or, you know, I've made the mistake of attacking her too many times in certain games. And when she just refuses to die, sometimes you waste like half of a round focusing on her. So I've taken to using her kind of like a swift capture machine, where I'll just send her forward onto an objective I want to contest. And if she does die, it's not really that big of a deal. And I would say distraction is probably the biggest problem in those situations. They can just push her off of the objective. But if they don't have a push, then sometimes she can be really, really hard to shift. And then if you can send Slake Slash after her, you know, in your next activation, or maybe you even send Slake Slash in first and then you'll set soon afterwards. You can use power cards like Shared Pain and things like that to make the two of them quite annoying. And you know, her attack, you can't really count on it, but I played a game earlier today. I was playing the Lady Harrows, and the first activation of the game, she took out the Widow Kathia. So, you know, that attack will hit sometimes. When it does, it's annoying.
I like to call that the Gristlewell effect.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, where it's like you don't know what's going to happen, but you love it when it hits and your opponent groans.
Yeah.
I agree. I really like Glissette. Aesthetically, she's my favorite fighter. She's got a bit of a Princess Jasmine vibe going on. So
yeah,
gotta support the heritage there. And from a mechanical perspective, I completely agree. She's hard to take off. You know, and the distraction is a sad point. But I think they've got some good power cards to help combat that. And then, of course, you know, due to a limited universal pool, because we just saw rotation, I think Sidestep's been making it into a lot of my decks. And so having this Sidestep as a backup option to counter a Mischievous or a distraction is huge and can help you when scoring cards like Dominant Position and things like that.
Yeah, I've even started taking Over My Dead Body recently.
Mm.
And a lot of the time you'll just score it because you're on objectives anyway and either they'll miss. But she's amazing at scoring this right off the bat. She's not like quite as good as Gartok because, you know, if you do hit him, he's not going to die most of the time. But I think she's pretty good at this one. And it's very frustrating when you attack somebody, miss, and then give them a glory.
Yeah, you're just kicking them while they're down.
Yeah, yeah.
Very chaos of you. Like it.
Yep.
Well, let's go over that last fighter, Hadzu.
Yeah, Hadzu. So Hadzu is 2 health. He is a hunter. 1 dodge, 4 movement, and has a ranged attack, Arrows of Desire, which is a pretty solid ranged attack. 3 range, 3 fury, 1 damage. So, you know, that's the same as a Farstrider, I guess. And then it has a special rule, Arrows of Desire, which says, in the drive back step of this attack action, instead of driving the target back, push the target up to 1 hex. And the cool thing about this is that it basically gets around anything that stops you from being driven back. Such as being on guard or the guard talk rule where you just can't be driven back or deserve confidence, anything like that. If you have an ability where you can't be pushed, then this still doesn't work. But those are, I would say, much more rare. And the cool thing about this is it doesn't have to be away from Hadzu. It can be towards him or sideways or, you know, any direction you want.
Yeah, I particularly really like that application. You can get around the whole, well, actually, you can't push me into this lethal because it's not technically further away from you. It breaks that, and I love that so much. Very thematic. A very, very cool ability, and one that makes you think of how to leverage him, despite him potentially being your most expendable fighter.
Yeah, yeah, and I would say he definitely is the most expendable and the easiest to kill because with 1 dodge before he inspires, it's not that great. Once inspired, it goes to 5 movement, 2 dodge, and 4 range on the arrows, which is okay. But I would say you're not trying to inspire for this fighter, really. It's more probably Glissette and the leader that matter the most for the inspire.
Agreed. One thing I do really like is that you could take Snare in this warband quite comfortably because you have two hunters.
Well, the interesting thing about Hadzu is he actually can't use Snare because he can't drive back.
That is right. Yeah. And it says instead, doesn't say you may.
Yeah.
It's actually a command. Yeah. That's interesting. Good catch there. Well, then I, you know, maybe it's not, but you know, if you're maybe taking Savage Speed and Strength for Vasilak, then at that point it might be overkill, but I still like the idea of it.
Yeah. And I think you can also take, I think there's a pretty good argument for taking something like an Amber Bone Weapon in this warband.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he is still a hunter, so you could snare that. It's just important to note that the bow doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Very, very good shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think the Amber Bones are still quite good. I think that the newer ones that also give you hunter are interesting as well. But,
yeah, you know, and it's really interesting that they've created a lore reason to justify why their wounds are so low. If you look at the rule book, it actually says Vasilak selected these two head knights whose martial efforts would complement, but highlight his own. So he wanted to be the center of attention. So it's really interesting. So
yeah, that is cool.
Very nice tie into the lore as well. I have to say they've done an amazing job with the story and the setting this season. Like for me as an individual, I felt more immersed in it than I ever have, which is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very neat. I just like the Slaanesh models in general. So I'm very, very excited to finally play with these guys and stuff.
Absolutely. Speaking of playing, let's jump into their faction objectives. So I will go through the objectives. Jonathan will go through the gambits, and then I will finish off with the upgrades. And of course, we'll be critiquing them as we always do. So let's start with Beautiful Deaths. This is a duel worth 6 glory. Score this in the end phase if there are 3 or more surviving friendly fighters and 3 or more enemy fighters are out of action.
Yeah. What do you think of this one?
So I love the fact that it's 6 glory because, again, thematic, and it's an amazing glory reward. I just don't see you doing this consistently. I can see you having games where you just like hit, 3 fighters dead, which is nice. But mm-hmm. then you also remember that it's also a bit of a meta call because, as we've mentioned a couple times, or at least insinuated, there are a lot of crushes in Molag and even Hrothgorn being played.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Harrows, you mentioned are playing as well. And it's really hard to get through that defensive stat for the 2 dodge. So unless we see a meta in which Horde warbands are dominating, I don't see you even considering this, despite the fact that it might feel a little greedy. And even if it is a Horde defined meta, I still don't know if I would rely on this one.
Yeah, I mean, the first condition where you have to have 3 friendly fighters surviving, I think gets very difficult after the probably first round. So yeah, I don't think it's reliable. I think it's definitely greedy. Which yeah, you're right in with this warband.
Yeah, you're actually making it harder for you to score this card by inspiring, in a way. So
yeah,
right, that there, right there alone is a cause of concern to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Alrighty. Cavalcade of Madness. Duel. Score this in the end phase if there are 3 or more surviving friendly fighters, and each surviving friendly fighter is inspired for 2 glory. Thoughts?
Similar to the one before, I think that the first part of the condition is just too difficult. I think a lot of warbands will be able to reliably kill 2 fighters, I would say definitely by the second round. And if you're saying that this is probably reliable in the first round, you might be right, but then you have to also make sure that you inspire. So I think it's just a little bit too hard, to do both of those things at the same time.
Completely agree. Let's jump on to the next one, which is the first surge of this warband, Endless Revel.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Surge, score this immediately after an activation of each surviving friendly fighter has 1 or more move and or charge tokens. What do you think about this one?
I like this one a lot. I actually think it's really cool from like a balance perspective. I think this is definitely playable, but it is worse in the early game than it is the end game. If you only have one fighter left, then this is one of the best surges in the game. One of the easiest ones anyway. If you have four, then it's going to take you a little while, but you should be able to get it. So I like it a lot, and I've been taking it in my decks, and it's been great. The only time I don't like it is when I don't want to charge with all my fighters, but I find I usually do want to. So
yeah, and you can also just move, right? Unless I guess I'm assuming that you want to make that attack, and you're probably in range because of the spears.
Yeah, a lot of the time, fine. Like my first move will be like moving Hadzu onto an objective, and then I'll probably charge with the other three. So I find it works pretty good.
Yeah, and then he gets slick rocked.
He still gets the charge token though, or the move token.
That's right. It doesn't go away there. I really like this. Yeah. This reminds me of, is like a different version, but maybe could be like a cousin of Team Effort in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I think that could maybe even be a universal card that you could look into. Cause I think four fighters or less in a warband is probably the sweet spot for that card. Ideally three, but again, two of your fighters have two wounds. So.
Yeah. And I like Team Effort for this warband as well. It does have the requirement where you have to have two fighters alive. So sometimes you'll run into that not working, but I'd still probably consider it for him. I take it in arrows, and they only have four as well. So
yeah, for sure. Next card, Excess of Avidity. This is a really good one. Score this in the end phase if your warband holds more objectives than any other warband. So a faction version of Dominant Position.
Yeah, it's so good.
I know you love this card.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great card by itself. It was a great card when Lady Harrow's had it. And then being able to take two of them is really, really good. For this warband, obviously, it's also why I've been playing Lady Harrow's. It's just a really good combo. I rate this as high as it can be rated.
I completely agree. Great card. And it helps you lean into that hold objective playstyle, or that least semi hold objective. Yeah. But, that's probably the most reliable way to get big glory scores at the end. So,
And even though you only have four fighters, more objectives can be won. So like all you have to do is just control the board. That a lot.
And they've got some good cards to help with that. And we'll get into that in the gambit phase, but,
absolutely.
Or section rather. So let's go to the next one. Excess of Carnality. Very interesting names. Surge. Score this immediately after an activation if two or more friendly fighters are adjacent to the same enemy fighter. So we've seen this one in the past with other factions and universals. Do you think it is better here?
Maybe. I don't like this one very much compared to some of the other surges that we have access to, but I have seen it played and I have seen it be scored somewhat reliably. So to me, this is maybe more of a personal choice. I think a lot of the time Slake Slash ends up next to somebody, and then you can charge somebody else next to that person as well. And it's particularly in the beginning, you're not really trying to kill fighters, so you may have situations where they're adjacent. So I think this is playable. I just don't think it's one of the six like best surges in the game. So it really is going to depend on like where are you using your restricted cards and things like that.
Yeah, agreed. I think the only reason that I consider this card is because it does somewhat synergize with your Inspire. Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily trying to kill the enemy. You're just trying to damage them to a point where, maximum excess is created. And so in this situation, I think there is a bit of synergy there, but I would agree that I wouldn't go to this one for my first six or even my first eight if I'm narrowing it down.
Yeah, the nice thing about it is if you draw into this and you look at the board, I imagine a lot of the time you'll be in a situation where you can score it. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's probably easier towards like the beginning or the middle of the game, but I'd say it's definitely playable.
Indeed. Cool. So excess of gluttony is another surge. Score this immediately after an activation if one or more friendly fighters are each adjacent to two or more enemy fighters. So a little mirror of the previous card. Yeah. Do you think this one is better?
I would say usually no. I don't think it's better. I think it will be in some situations, but I think that I guess I would prefer having to position my fighters than the enemy's fighters.
I'm inclined to agree. I think this one is less controllable. And if you're already doubting excess of carnality, then you're probably not looking at excess of gluttony either.
Yeah, I guess the difference can be, well, I guess it's just situational. I mean, you may be able to score this easier in some situations by just charging in between two fighters, and you won't need any other setup. But I also don't like giving them support, so I don't know. It's okay. I think you can play it.
Right, right. But from a competitive perspective, I'd probably pass, I think.
Yeah, I would too, particularly with the current selection.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's go into the next excess. Excess of Indolency. Hybrid. Score this in the end phase if there are no enemy fighters with any move or charge tokens, or your warband holds two or more objectives. I have a feeling you're going to like this one.
Yeah, I like the second part of it a lot. I don't really know how you would score the first part. I guess you'd have to wipe them out, basically. But yeah, the second part for holding two objectives for two glory, I think this is incredible.
Yes, and it stacks really well with the, you know, the dominant position and their faction copy, which is excess of avidity.
Yeah, yeah. And like with Glorious Triumph helping you get a third one every now and then, or getting an additional one when you get a kill every now and then, I think this is very reliable. And I mean, on any other objective warband, this would be, you know, borderline overpowered. But because they only have two fighters, like, I think it's fair-ish. And I mean, they only have four fighters. So holding two is kind of tough. But I think when you're playing against this warband, you have to assume that they're going to try to control more objectives than you. And if they do it, they might get anywhere from like 2 to 6 glory from it. So I think you definitely have to prioritize stopping these cards.
Agreed. Agreed. Next, excess of Paramountcy. Hybrid. Score this in the end phase if your leader holds an objective in enemy territory, or one or more enemy leaders hold an objective in your territory.
Yeah.
Again, they really like holding objectives, and I think in a way this could help with Swift Capture, or at least provide some synergy there.
Yeah, I think it could. I don't know if it's quite as, I don't know if it's really as worth taking as some of the other ones. I do like that, you know, the enemy could accidentally score it for you. It helps with like Bold Conquest and things if they're going for that. I would say if you take this, maybe you should take Bold Conquest yourself too. So I think it's okay. I just don't, I think right now there are better end phases.
Agreed. And a lot of better ones in the faction itself. So you don't have to look too far.
Yeah. But I don't think this is a bad card. I think that's one of the things that we've noticed looking at both of the two new warbands is like a lot of their stuff is absolutely playable. It's just, you know, maybe not the most powerful card that we've seen.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, again, wonderful job to the designers of this set. I think when looking at it from a competitive lens, which I think we automatically just tend to do, I think we can be a bit more critical. But as Jonathan has mentioned, just love to reinforce the fact that if you like it, play it.
Yeah. Yeah. And for new players, like, I don't think, you know, you could have this card in your hand and, you know, try to figure out a way to do it. So I just like how accessible this set is.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the game. So, excess of Vainglory, Surge Hybrid. Score this immediately after a friendly fighter's attack action if the attack action takes an enemy fighter with two or more upgrades out of action, or that friendly fighter has three or more upgrades.
Yeah, I like this one. I've had it in some of my decks. I've seen opponents play it. It seems to be, I would say, a pretty good card. I think whether or not you're going to need to take it is up for question. There may be some better options, but I would say this warband typically tends to Voltron a particular fighter by putting a lot of different upgrades on them. So later in the game, the second condition where you make an attack if you have three or more upgrades is very easy to do. It's much like Show of Force. It's not quite as good as Show of Force, but it's similar. And then sometimes you'll just take out a fighter with upgrades on, because a lot of the time the enemy is going to Voltron as well. So it's pretty decent, I think.
Agreed. It reminds me of like Vicious Kill from the Gits, or Malicious Kill, one of the two. But I do think Show of Force is just better, because there is a more accessible, I think, to an extent, alternative condition rather than having a fighter with three or more upgrades after an activation. And this one requires a kill while Show of Force does not. So,
right.
Again, there's some synergies here, which is neat.
Yeah, I agree.
Next one is Godseekers, which is a variation of Conquest. Score this in the end phase if each surviving friendly fighter is in enemy territory. In fact, I think it is Conquest.
Yeah, just not the third end phase. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I initially didn't like this one because I think I was so set on playing this warband objectively, or hold objective style. And I don't think it has great synergy with that. But I have played against a deck with this in it that was much more aggressive focused. And I think it's very good if that's how you're going to play. And I would say that I think that that's more viable than I thought it was. Even in an objective deck, maybe you just get this in the second round or the third round or something like that. I think I initially rated this a little bit low. I think it's still a little situational, but I think it's a solid card.
Agreed. I think naturally when you look through the entire kit that they have, you are immediately thinking, well, they lean more to objective play, but if that's not your interest or style, or if you just every once in a while prefer a good, joust, then I think Godseekers is a great alternative. Mm-hmm. And personally, I like it if you are playing an aggressive version, which I think these guys can surprise you in terms of how aggressive they can be and how killy they can be.
Yeah, that was my experience. Slake Slash, when he gets a bunch of upgrades on him, is pretty devastating. You have to do some, pushes and stuff to make him get more than one attack around. But if you can do that, then, it's pretty good. And the nice thing about this, as opposed to some of their other admittedly excellent two glory end phase cards, is that the enemy can't really stop it unless they've killed everybody. Which usually doesn't probably happen, at least not right away.
It can, though. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, because they can play Mischievous Spirits and mess up everything else that you're trying to do. But this is just going to happen if you charge in four times. So
agreed. And I think it's also a meta call. Like Molog can just dunce your warband pretty pretty early if he gets a little lucky. So he can do that to a lot of warbands. But I think in this situation, just be aware of that. If you're looking for a meta in which he's rampaging about, then perhaps this isn't the best call.
Yeah.
Food for thought.
Yeah. And if you're against somebody very aggressive, it may not even make sense to go into their territory. They may be coming into your territory. So yeah, it's just, it's interesting. I think I overlooked it, but I guess we'll see what ends up being better.
Indeed. So we're getting towards the end here. Last two, Grisly Tableau. Score this immediately after a friendly fighter's attack action that takes an enemy fighter holding objective out of action.
Yeah, this one's okay. I think there is a lot of objective holding going on right now, but I'd say this is generally somewhat situational. So I'd probably give it a pass, but again, it's playable.
Yeah, I think if you want to go to the aggressive route, I think as long as dominant position is stock is high, this card stock rises with it. And then it's maybe if people decide to move away from dominant position in the future, then perhaps this card stock goes down. But I think because of cards like that exist and they're pretty easy to score, it's not bad. But I agree, it's not ideal either.
Yeah. The surge selection is just so good right now that if you can't score something, every time you have it in your hand, then it's kind of hard to justify it sometimes.
Yeah, completely agree. Well, we're off to our last card here, Scintillating Sadism. Score this in the end phase if each surviving enemy fighter has one or more wound counters.
Yeah. This one's definitely a meta call, I think.
I think it's great in Relic. Just play Shardgale, you're good to go.
Yeah, this warband in general is pretty interesting in Relic. Because of Shardgale. Oh, I inspired.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this is my least favorite card in their entire objective set.
Interesting. You just think it's too hard to score?
I do. And again, if your opponent knows you have this card and you get it off of, against them once, they're not going to let you score. A smart player won't let you score this again because they'll just kill their own fighter. And while you may get one, they deny you that second glory. So, I personally don't like it.
I mean, I guess it depends because there's no limit on the number of enemy fighters. So if they only have three fighters, all you have to do is kill or wound all of them.
But you can't rely on that. You cannot rely on, you could play Zarbag's Gitz and then you're screwed.
Exactly. That's the problem with this card. If the meta turns out to be Krusha dominated, this might be a pretty good card. But if it's not, then, it's just situational. I tend to like cards that'll work in every situation. So I think I would skip it, but I've actually had this one played against me today with Harrows and it's great against Harrows because eventually you get it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like you could, in theory, wipe a warband or do some pretty decent damage and then just make sure you ping the last fighter or last couple fighters. And this could work out because it's just surviving enemy fighters. But I think you're absolutely correct. It is a meta call. And if you call this correctly and you get some favorable matchups, this can win you games, but right. I don't think you're going to get that lucky every time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we, that's just something we've talked about before. We just try to want everything to be as reliable across as many games as possible. So.
Yep. Do you want to jump into the faction gambits? Before we do that, do you have a favorite? I know I told you my least favorite, but what's your favorite here?
I think my favorite is their version of dominant position.
Shocker.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that's such a cool play style. So that's definitely my favorite one.
Yeah.
How about you?
I like Endless Revel. And it's a little bit of a weird story behind it, but my dad's company is called Revel. So every time I see this, I think of my dad's company and I'm just like, I like it.
That's probably one of my close favorites as well. I think, I just think it's cool.
I like Surge's. Yeah. I'm totally Surge biased in this game. So.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's go to the gambits. The first one is Bonded Bodyguard. It is restricted to Slake Slash. And it says reaction after this fighter's movement or move action. If that fighter is not, let me start over. Reaction after another fighter's move action. If that fighter is not adjacent to a friendly Slake Slash, push a friendly Slake Slash up to 2 hexes. After the push, that Slake Slash must be no more than 2 hexes from a friendly Vasilic. This is a weird one.
So I agree it's a bit wordy. I like it actually. And so my theory behind this is that if you're going for that hold objective style, you can actually manipulate this in a way with proper planning to where like Slake Slash can get a free move or push rather onto an objective as long as Vasilic is close. I do think that maybe it competes with Blindside. So you would probably want to look at that card if you were going to consider this card. But I personally think it's not bad.
Yeah, I think the weakness of this card is that you have to keep Slake Slash and Vasilic together, which I don't really like. But maybe that's just the way I'm playing them, is I tend to send Slake Slash in early with Glissette. But it is very powerful. I mean, I could see situations where the enemy moves something and then you just get a free push, basically. And that could get you something like Swift Capture or, something like that. So I haven't played it so far. But maybe it's worth thinking about.
Yeah, I definitely think you should consider it. And then if you don't like it, great. Just switch it out. But I think the applications here are pretty neat, especially in an aggro warband. You can get some supports maybe or get more aggressive and get some better charges as well.
Yeah, more like a sneaky shared pain or something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's go to the next one. It is Cruel Pangs. It is choose one fighter holding an objective, deal one damage to that fighter. We've seen this one before, Lethal Ward. But this time it's the Dread Pageant only.
Take it. Move on. Just take it.
Yeah, it's great, particularly because you can use it on your own fighters if you need to help that inspire. So the next one is Dark Desires. Choose one enemy fighter. The chosen fighter's player must pick one. Give that fighter one move token, or you push that fighter one hex. What do you think of that one?
So I really, really like this card. It reminds me a lot of Toxic Gases, which is one of my favorite cards from Profiteers.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of player agency and potentially creating a scenario in which it doesn't matter what they choose, it's a bad decision. And giving a fighter a move token is devastating, but pushing that fighter, which you're able to control, can also be equally devastating. That can ruin their end phase scoring via objective holding. That can push them into a lethal hex. That can make it to where one of your fighters doesn't have to charge. I think it's a very, very powerful push, a very, very powerful card. And if your opponent ever takes the first option, take full advantage of that, because that can be crippling in certain situations.
Yeah, I think it can. I don't think this card is better than Toxic Gases, though. Do you?
No, but I think it's similar in design, which is why I think I'm a little biased towards liking it.
Yeah, I love the design space. I think it's really cool that you make your opponent pick what they want to happen. I've found that with this card, unlike Toxic Gases, where a lot of the time you can give your opponent a situation where neither choice is a good one, I found in this case, there can be a right choice. Obviously, like that you'd prefer not to have either one happen. But like if the enemy is holding an objective and you can't really use it to disrupt that because it'll just take the move token. If, you know, you're trying to keep a fighter from charging you, then, you know, maybe they'll take the push. And then, you know, unless it's exactly the distance you needed, then, you know, it may not be as good. But I don't know. I think it's okay. I'm just not sure if it's better than Distraction, and I don't know if you take both of them. And there's another push card that they have that's, you know, much better. So I'm a little torn on this one. Very playable, but I feel like it doesn't give your opponent enough bad choices. I feel like there's usually a right choice, if that makes sense.
So I can agree with what you're saying. I do think you're being a bit more critical, which is your opinion, of course, on this card than which is just good. You know, we don't agree on everything. Personally, I think more often than not, I agree that there's always a correct choice. You know, like most people in Toxic Gases won't take the ping. They'll just let you push them unless, of course, you facilitate a scenario in which they're just going to get pushed into a lethal instead. So they really don't have a choice. You're never going to get that superior satisfaction and scenario created with this card. It's never going to happen.
Right.
So I don't know if a direct comparison is warranted, but I do think that if you're playing this warband aggressively, or even if you're trying to deny the objective game, I mean, like the only way you can get on objectives is if you move, whether a charge or a move or a push. And if you give your fighter a move token and then you are able to manipulate a push later on, either through their faction cards or through universals, that can be devastating. And so I think while this card may require a little bit of help with other cards, I think I like it. And I've had fun with it. Mm-hmm. I will agree that it's not as overtly powerful as Toxic Gases, but I don't know if they're in the same conversation per se, other than design space.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Maybe I need to think about it differently. It may be that it's less of like a finisher like Toxic Gases could be, and it's more of like a preemptive kind of card that you use. Like, oh, an enemy is possibly going to charge me, and they also happen to be next to a lethal hex. So now I'll either lock them up or push them into the lethal hex or something like that.
Yeah, and that's just one example, right? And you may be correct. I ultimately may not take this card in the future, but I do think that there is more hope here, or at least credit, than perhaps it's being given at the time. But that's just my personal opinion.
No, I think you've made me think about it a little bit differently. I think that I was comparing it directly to Toxic Gases, and that may not be the way to think about it. So I'll have to think about that one some more.
Well, I appreciate you taking it into consideration.
Sure.
See, guys, we can all be friends and still disagree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we value each other's opinions. So, like, if you think something's good and I don't, like, I might be missing something, you know? So,
yeah.
It's always good to
absolutely
hash those things out, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You've definitely put me onto a couple cards in the past as well, so.
Yeah, yeah, vice versa. The next one is Deadly Embrace. It is a reaction. Play this during a enemy fighter's range 1 or range 2 attack action that targets a friendly fighter after the deal damage step if the friendly fighter has been dealt enough damage to take them out of action. Roll 1 magic dice. On a roll of channel, that friendly fighter makes an attack action that must target the attacker. What do you think about this one?
So you're the numbers guy, so I'll let you do the number crunching here.
Sure.
But personally, I see why they've moved away from the on a roll of a block and a crit or a roll of a hammer and a crit. You know, you can do something. This is a straight 50-50 on a single magic die to be able to make another attack action. Now, while making another attack action is amazing, I think once Jonathan explains the math, I think you'll find that it's actually still quite inaccurate and unlikely that the attack will go through.
Yeah, so basically I don't like these cards because it's a 50-50 to then make an attack action, which, you know, most attack actions are also 50-50. So that means it's a 25% chance to actually kill something. One thing that is worth noting is that if you use this on Vasilic or Slake Slash, that 25% of the time when you both get this card to go off and then actually hit that attack action, they might be able to heal themselves back up and not die because the timing on this is during the deal damage step or right after it. It's before you check if they've taken enough damage. So you could actually hit the enemy, heal up, and then not die. So I'm still not sure if it's worth a ploy slot because if they overkill you, for example, you still can't do it. You'll just get the attack. So I don't think it's worth it, but there would be situations where this might win you a game if, you know, you keep your leader alive or you keep Slake Slash alive. Does that interaction change anything for you?
So while I do think that you've made the card a little bit more appealing to me, I just don't like that lack of consistency. So I'm still pretty meh on the card, mm-hmm. but I do think that interaction you pointed out is really neat and is a unique flavor to the warband itself and the fact that one of these fighters can heal. But I don't know if I'm still taking it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess you could think of it like a worse rebound, kind of.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. But then in that case, just take a rebound.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's seeing more play lately, by the way. It's on a fair share of my decks.
Uh-oh. Got to roll those crits and those dodges.
Uh-oh. What?
You've done it to me once already.
Oh, yeah.
This season, so.
But yes, the rebound was nice, and I'm glad that it worked out because I think you weren't expecting it at all.
No, I was not. Let's go to the next card.
All right, you got it.
It is Enervating Perfume, -1 damage from the first attack action made in the next activation to a minimum of 1. It is restricted to Vasilic. What do you think of this one?
Just no. So we've actually talked about a card like this. I think this is a card that we see a lot in factions. I think it's just one of those cards that is thrown in, and it helps new players learn a bit or two about the game. But one thing they'll come to realize very quickly is that in the next activation is neat, but it's not really going to do much. I rather see that the fighter takes 1 less damage or your warband takes 1 less damage, mm-hmm. but just if it's just your leader, they can ignore him or they just won't attack. And it's just a wasted ploy, I think.
Well, so the leader has to be alive for you to play the card, but it's any attack action in the next activation.
That's correct. I guess it's not. Sure. I guess I misread it, which is fine.
Yeah.
I don't think it's bad, but I just think there are better options like rebound.
Yeah. If this was a reaction, obviously it would be much better, like Narrow Escape. That the Rippas have. I think this card is okay. I have taken this card, but I think I ended up changing it out for Buried Instinct. I would rather surprise you with a guard token and potentially just miss the attack altogether. So a lot of this game is figuring out how to do exactly the amount of damage that you need to kill the enemy fighter, and this will mess with that. So I think it's playable, but I don't think we'll see that much of it. But I think we might see some of it, because if you can take this and Buried Instinct, then that's pretty annoying, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just, I don't know why I zoned out there and misread that card, but yeah.
No. I think certain cards being restricted like that is a common way to think about it. So.
Well, no, it's funny because I've played this card correctly. I don't know why I just boggled out. I think my internet's got me flustered. So, but yes.
No problem.
I think this card is better than what I initially gave it credit for.
Yeah, I think it's okay. The next one is Fueled by Sensation. Choose one friendly fighter, pick one, heal one that fighter, deal one damage to that fighter. I don't like this one very much.
Yeah, it's a bit redundant based on the fighter abilities. I do like the idea that you can force and inspire early.
Yeah.
But I just don't think pinging your fighter for one is actually quite conducive to your overall game plan. I guess you could maybe do it in your power phase, go into your activation, hit somebody with one of the two big guys, heal for one, and then negate that effect. But again, I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, and yeah, I mean, that doesn't really even work, because you'd have to inspire. You wouldn't inspire until after that attack action. So it's just kind of strange. Yeah, I just don't like it. I think that if you want to ping your own fighters, you have the cool pings, the one that's lethal ward. So I think you just skip it. I don't think healing one is worth it on a card. Healing two might be. But I just don't think this one's quite good enough. The next one is Lure of Slaanesh. Choose one fighter, push the chosen fighter one hex, or up to one hex for each surviving friendly fighter with one or more wound counters. What do you think of that one?
So just like the card text, none can resist the call of the Dark Prince. None can also resist the call of putting this into your deck. I think this is probably one of their best cards from a faction perspective. I mean, distraction is great, but being able to push them further than that in a way that synergizes very well with your Inspire, I think is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Being able to push a friendly fighter or an enemy fighter is amazing. And then the bonus is great as well. One of the things I've noticed people playing this wrong, I've done it myself. You do this in order to push with the second condition. In order to push two hexes, you have to have two fighters that are wounded. Three hexes is three, and so on. I think I initially read it as like one additional hex for each wound that you have, and that's, or each fighter that you have that's wounded, and that's not how it works. So just be aware of that, but amazing, amazing card.
Yeah, super good, and good explanation there as well.
Cool. Let's go to the next one. It is Rush of Sensation. It is a reaction. Play this after a friendly fighter's attack action that takes an enemy fighter out of action. That fighter makes one move action. What do you think of that one?
So definitely situational, but I think it's still a very powerful card. I think very similar to some cards we've seen in the Blade Coven. You can essentially charge with a fighter. Hopefully get a kill and then get back to safety or even onto an objective. Yeah. So I think it's really good.
Yeah, I think it is too. I haven't been playing it because I don't feel like it goes with the style of deck that I've been playing where I'm trying to hold objectives. But I think if you're doing a more aggressive style, or maybe if you can just make room for it, I think it'll be pretty useful pretty often.
Agreed.
The next one is one of my favorites, Shared Pain. It is a reaction. Play this during an enemy fighter's attack action that targets a friendly fighter after this determine success step. When resolving the deal damage step, choose one friendly fighter within three hexes of the target. That fighter, rather than the target, is dealt the damage from the attack action. Then the combat sequence ends. This is a great one.
Super cool, super thematic, very, very good card, and can really help keep your, as you alluded earlier, your weaker, or I guess less tanky, more fragile characters alive, mm-hmm. and put some of that damage onto Slake Slash and hopefully, you know, count up those counters and rack them up for inspiration.
Yeah, it's so versatile, and like, not only can you use it like that if you're going to lose, your leader or Slake Slash, if you think that that's not what you want to do, you can just pass the damage on to Hadzu and, you know, he dies instead. So, so versatile. It also is really cool for, if you need to hold an objective. I mentioned having cards like, Over My Dead Body earlier. This is a great way to pass the damage and the original attacker, you know, gets to stay there. I guess one thing to be aware of is if the enemy is playing with the primacy and this kills the second person, it does count because it is still the attack action that's dealing the damage. So anything that triggers off of that will still go off. But it's a really, really cool card.
Yeah, I agreed. I think, you know, I mentioned that Lure of Slaanesh is a very good card. I think this is also on equal playing field there. Two very, very good cards.
Yeah, I think you'd put those two in every single deck you make, I think.
Yeah.
I'd be hard-pressed to find a good reason not to, yeah. let's go to the next one. It is Vicious Barbs. Choose one enemy fighter adjacent to one or more friendly fighters. The chosen fighter is uninspired and cannot be inspired. This effect persists until the end of the round or until that fighter is taken out of action. When this effect ends, the chosen fighter is inspired. What do you think about that one?
So I think it's neat, but also in a way kind of gimmicky. And let me explain that, right? Because, you know, in some cases, you could uninspire a fighter and they can lose so much, whether it's damage output or even a wound, right? If someone inspires and gains a wound, and then you uninspire them and then they have enough tokens on them to kill them, this could get around, you know, maybe some dwarves or something like that, right? If if you see them creep back into the meta. So I think it's neat, but I don't know if the effect is good enough because it only lasts for one round. I guess it could be really hurtful to, you know, a Krusha or a Molog, you know, if they don't have any upgrades. But those warbands are getting so many upgrades all the time that I don't know, like maybe if it's a wizard level 2 compared to 1, that can be huge, but I don't see it doing much more than having a niche effect in a random game and you being like, oh, right. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, obviously this could be really good in some situations, like Hrothgorn really doesn't like it because then maybe you can kill him easier. But yeah, I just think it's a little bit situational. Yeah. That's going to be it for the gambits. I think we may have already mentioned our favorites. Is there anything else you want to, I think mine's Shared Pain.
Yeah. I think mine is either that or Lure of Slaanesh, but you're right. We highlighted both of those repeatedly. So,
yeah, cool. Let's jump into the upgrades then.
Yeah. So first off, Cruel Volley reaction after this fighter's first range 3 plus attack action in a round, this fighter makes a range 3 plus attack action. What do you think? It's restricted to Hadzu, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. This is an interesting one. We've seen this kind of card before with Fast Shot for the Wild Hunt, and the Profiteers have a similar card for Iron Hail. I think it's okay, but I don't think that we have the current. I don't think we currently have the cards needed to support this. Back in the day with Profiteers, you would want to take a lot of crit damage. And, you know, it was just maybe you'd have Glory Seeker. So you could kill, you know, fighters pretty good because it also has knockback, maybe put them into a lethal and stuff. And then with Wild Hunt, you know, Glory Seeker, Snare, that kind of stuff. I just don't feel like we have the support for this to be a very good card.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think Hadzu is not worth the investment given how fragile he is.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I think, you know, you can do really neat things with this in that, you know, you can maybe manipulate his unique Arrow of Desire ability. So that can be a wrench in your opponent's plans. But I think for the reasons that you mentioned, and then the primary reason that I stated in that he's just two wounds, I think I'd pass here.
Yeah, I think that, that's right. The next one is, or I guess you're doing these, sorry.
No, it's okay. Dance Without End. And again, if you want to say one, go ahead, dude. It's, this one is reaction, and after another friendly fighter's move action, push this fighter 1 hex or 2 hexes if you first deal 1 damage to this fighter, restricted to Glissette.
Yeah, this is kind of a strange one. I just don't really know when I would want this.
If she had three wounds, I'd take it. But because she's a two-wound fighter and there are lethals everywhere, I just hard pass.
Yeah, it's just very, very situational. Yeah, it's just weird. So I don't think I have anything more to say about it.
yeah, no worries. Distracting, ostentation, minus one dice from attack actions made by enemy fighters adjacent to this fighter to a minimum of one. We've seen this card a lot recently in Beastgrave warbands. What do you think of it in this warband?
I actually like this card. I don't think it's great, particularly because of the how often people have ranged attacks. But a lot of the time you can position yourself next to the enemy with this card and they either have to charge away from you, you know, to get around it. I've had it work pretty well against Hrothgorn and maybe some other people. So I like it. I don't think it'll be in every deck, but I think you could put it in certain decks. I think it's very good against crushes. I think it's very good against any melee, you know, range one warbands. So there's not a lot of accuracy ploys in the game right now. So I think this can help counteract it. So I've been putting it in decks, but I don't know if it'll, you know, make the cut in the long run.
My only challenge is that you have two fighters with range two and one fighter with range three.
Yeah.
So this is really only going on Slake Slash, honestly. And so I don't know. I just think that if it really truly synergizes with one fighter optimally, I can see why you would consider it, but I think there might be, I'd rather just take plus one, like wound or defense or something. Right. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that would definitely be the kind of card it would compete with. And I could see that, it's probably like the second or third durability card I would take. So I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't make the cut in a lot of decks. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Mark of the Dark Prince reaction during this fighter's range one attack action before the attack roll. Deal one damage to this fighter. If you do choose cleave or ensnare, the attack action has the ability until it has been resolved. And this is restricted to Slake Slash. This was a card that we saw previewed pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a video when it was during with the ominous music of Dire Chasm. What do you think?
This is a really good card. I just don't like that it's restricted to Slake Slash, who, you know, I don't think he's bad at doing damage, but I don't think he's your like main damage dealer unless you tool him up with a lot of different cards. And I think there might be better accuracy cards for him. I think I would prefer just taking like Hunter's Talisman or something. And then you know, and then maybe that could be used on somebody else if I have enough other Hunter upgrades. So I think it's okay. I mean, getting cleave or ensnare can be really powerful, but, and then hopefully his, you know, attack would hit and then he could heal himself back up. But
yes, the interesting thing with these restricted fighter cards, I know that a lot of warbands just get them because it's flavorful, but out of all the people who get restricted ones, I'm most inclined to take them for Slake Slash because he's so survivable in terms of his wound count. So in a way you can almost rely on using them because he's not going to go down very early.
Yeah. I think he also gets ignored a lot because of how attacking him helps you inspire.
That's right. So I think again, like for all the reasons above, they're probably the most viable when restricted to strictly him. But I think you're right that there are better options out there. So, I guess we can just move on to the next one.
Okay.
Sadistic Goad. This is attack action upgrade. Range 2, 3 Fury, damage star. This attack action's damage characteristic is 1 plus the number of the target's wound counters. Thoughts?
This is, I think, a really fun one. I think the possibilities that this one has could be really interesting. If you've already hit, you know, Molog for 3 damage and then you hit him with this, that's going to work. But I'm not sure if it's better than some of the other weapons we already have. I probably just take the Amberbone sword. I don't know. This one might be worth playing around with because the range 2 is actually pretty nice. Although I guess everybody already has range 2 except for Slake Slash, but, I don't know. I feel like this is playable. I just don't think it makes the cut. But it would be... I bet if you played this like in a tournament, you would have a lot of really fun times when you hit somebody for like 4 or 5 damage or something.
Yes, I think this is like Bloody Axe in a way, where it's like super situational, but I think it can be really great. I think it's a great meta call. If we're facing a lot of big boys or tough fighters, like 4, 5, 6, 7 wounds.
Right.
You know, it's going to take multiple attack actions to take them down. So if you can do it in 2, why not?
Yeah, this probably competes with Bloody Axe as well, because they kind of do the same thing. So that's an interesting... And Bloody Axe might have a little bit more control, because you can just charge, like, slash through something. So
yeah, I like the idea of, though, like, maybe, like, hit, lethal snare, 3 wounds, next attack, slap this on, like, Hadzu or Glissette, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Maybe pop an accuracy card, and boom, that's a dead. Molag, Morgok, Hrothgorn... Stormsire, like it's pretty appealing. I think the idea of it, although it just might be an idea, it may not be applicable too often.
Yeah, and the range too is really nice. I mean, like honestly, if this was only range 2/3 fury 2 damage, this would be worth thinking about.
Agreed.
So, and because of how this warband works, with all the they want to wound people, I wonder if this is a little bit better than I think it is. I'm not sure.
I think when we see more ping damage in this game, this card is going to be really nice.
Yeah, I could see that too.
So let's jump to the next one. Sickening Resilience. When this fighter is dealt damage, roll 1 defense die. On a roll of a shield, this fighter is only dealt 1 damage. So on a... What is it? Like you have like half the
33%.
Dice? Is it just 2 blocks?
Yeah.
Yeah, 33% chance to reduce the damage to 1? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't like these cards. I don't like rolling, 33% chances.
Cough, rebound.
Yeah. And, rebound will win you a game. This one might help you win a game. It is a really good effect when you only take 1 damage instead of, 3 or 4 or whatever. But I probably wouldn't take it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So let's just jump to the next one. Soporific Musk. I'm going to Google that word after this. Soporific. Enemy fighters that begin a move action within 2 hexes of this fighter have -1 move to a minimum of 0. What do you think?
I think it's really cool. I like the design space of it. But I think right now there's a lot of movement. In the game, like most, I don't know, you kind of have to be in the middle of a low movement warband for this to be good. And it just seems too situational, but it's a cool effect for sure.
I think if you can like slap this on Slake Slash and then like, jump into a warband like full of 3 movement, it can just like be so devastating. But again, like it's really interesting. The Slaanesh cards, I think, require a lot of finesse because they're all like very meta dependent. I think not all of them, but a lot of them, right? And so a lot of these cards can be great in certain metas and then sometimes just like meh.
Yeah, that's where I'm at as well.
Well, I think this one is going to be good regardless. Strength from Pain, +1 damage to this fighter's range 1. Or range 2 attack actions if this fighter has 1 or more wound counters. Obviously, when you compare this to Savage Strength and Great Strength, this is clearly the weakest of the 3. But because of their Inspire condition, I think it's a lot more viable than you might think. What have you played with this one? What do you think about it?
Yeah, I have played this one. I would say partially because they're Inspire and also just because you have control over this if you're near lethal hexes. I think it's perfectly viable. It probably is the 3rd one that I take after Savage Strength and Great Strength. But I think it's good. And because your leader and Glissette both have range 2, I think it's probably better than Sting of the Urkrub in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool that they have it.
I agree. Swift as Desire is the next card, +1 move, +2 move instead if this fighter has 1 or more wound counters. What do you think?
I think this one's okay. I think if you're trying to do cover ground or gathered momentum, this will help you get gathered momentum a lot of the time. I don't believe you can move through a lethal and then move an additional hex. I don't think that's how movement works. So I don't think it's the same as the strength one, but I think it's okay. I don't think I'll play it because I don't like plus one move that much. I don't even really like the plus two move cards a lot of the time because they kind of only help me score gather momentum or cover ground, and then I don't feel like they're that useful. So I've kind of been straying away from that style in general. But I think it's an okay card.
I prefer movement buffs to be in gambits, so you can time them
right
with the cards you want, because generally you're only going to make one or two moves, right? It's a three round game. So you can only truly activate a fighter roughly three times, unless, of course, you know, you're not moving. But in this situation, you want the move, right? So,
yeah. And just kind of the way that the gathered momentum and cover ground, those kind of cards work, is you really want to have them in the beginning because they're sort of free. So this requires too much setup to really be good for those. So,
yeah, exactly. Those cards help you get the glory. This one, you need a glory to use it. So,
yeah,
I dig it. The last card in their kit and upgrades is, I guess we don't end with a bang, but I guess we end with a shatter in that we are looking at sword. Yeah. Sword Shatterer. This is restricted to a Vasilic reaction after a range one or range two attack action, which targets this fighter. Roll one attack dice. On a roll of smash, pick one of the attacker's upgrades. That card is discarded.
Yeah. I mean, a smash is also a 33% chance. And I don't think I would take this if it was like automatic. Because like first you have to survive the attack. And then you have to have an upgrade. And you've already put it on Vasilic, so they know that it's coming. So it has a lot of problems.
Agreed. I just think we ended here. this is probably their weakest card, I think, honestly. And I see the design space behind it. But again, for you know, 33% chance, this is not going to win you a game. I mean, I guess it could. You take away like a great fortitude and they die. But as you mentioned, this is highly telegraphed. So you know, I'm okay with just. Moving over to the final thoughts here.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, we've talked about this warband. We've talked about its lore. We've talked about the fighters that inspire all of the faction cards that come with them. And we've sprinkled in some universal cards as well. When you think about this warband as a whole, do you like, what are your thoughts here?
I think this is one of the cooler warbands that we've seen in a while. They're very strange. They have one really big fighter, two really small fighters, and then like a middle of the road but like still very powerful fighter. This is not what I would have expected when I saw a four fighter warband. I almost feel like that it sort of feels like they're almost missing a fighter. But their cards are pretty powerful, and they like their objective cards, and then they have some really good gambits that really let them function in a pretty unique style. So I've really enjoyed playing them so far. I've been surprised to see the different ways that other people play them, but that also seem to be effective. So I think this is definitely my favorite warband of the season so far, of the starter set. And I'm just pretty happy with them. I think they're a blast to play.
Yeah, I would say that they're a little less straightforward when compared to the purifiers, right? And I think that may be by design. Again, very similar parallel in that this is almost like a finesse warband. And I think a lot of the aside from the Khorne warbands, a lot of the solo faction chaos warbands, single deity factions, are very finessey to play. You know, the Warm Spat, the Eyes of the Nine, and now we have the Dread Pageant, where you really have to be thinking a couple steps ahead, regardless if you're playing aggro or objective style. if you're not mapping out your movements and if you're not considering what's the worst case scenario and what fighters will live and die, which I think is a pretty good way to play the game in general, but especially so with these type of warbands, then I think you're going to struggle. But I think once you get a lot of reps in and you're familiar with the fighters and you see how powerful Vasilic and Slake Slash can be, you see how tanky Glissette and Slake Slash can be, and you see how you can utilize pieces like Hadzu, who seem very, I guess, not as exciting compared to other fighters. But if you can actually, you know, that push from that Arrow of Desire can really win you around in a way and screw up your opponents. So there's a lot of really cool ways in which you can play this warband. And I think even if you get like 10, 15, even 20 games in, you're still going to be learning and adapting. And I think if you really commit to this warband, you can find a lot of success, similar to the Worm Spat and the Eyes of the Nine. But I can see why you could also just be like, cool, interesting, I'm going to move away from them because I just find other things to be more reliable. It really depends on what you're looking for. I think for you, as you mentioned, they're interesting, they're thoughtful, they're not as obvious as other warbands. And for you, you really like that brain itch. You know, you're scratching that itch every game and getting some sort of technical and strategic pleasure, right? But for other people, they might just be like, I want to just play stuff and smash. And I don't think this is that kind of warband, right? Like, even you can even get away with that in Purifiers. You can just charge and smash. And to an extent, you can do that here. You know, we talked about aggressive a lot. But I really, really, really like the emphasis on the unique strategy here. You know, the Miari's Purifiers have those Aether Quartz counters, which I think heavily influence the way they were designed. And in this situation, it's all about taking wounds and delivering them. And I think if you can do that, and then we get a little bit of more ping support in the future, these guys are not to be slapped on, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just like the way they try to control the board with so few fighters. It's been something that I've kind of enjoyed doing before with McGord's Fiends or Lady Harrows and things like that. And this is like a very unique version of that. So I think they're really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Long time coming. For all the Slaanesh fans out there, including myself. And, I've been playing them more recently. We divvied up the warbands, as we've mentioned a couple times now. And, I put a lot of emphasis on the Purifiers. But I will say, in like the couple games I've played with them after the Purifiers, I've really enjoyed that strategic mindset where it's not as, again, overt or obvious in what you have to do. And it's really thinking, how can I maximize this fighter for as long as I can before they inevitably bite the dust, specifically Glissette and Hadzu, right? Because, again, two wounds, all it takes is one bad roll and they're out. So it's really interesting. There was one game I played where I immediately lost them off the bat. And I was really disappointed because the rolls just didn't go my way. But I still managed to inspire because I took four wounds on Slake Slash. And I had taken one wound on my leader and then dealt a wound because of their lethal ward equivalent, which I think is like pangs of lethal pangs or.
Cruel pangs.
So, there's a way and you can do it. You can really determine it or be determined rather. And ultimately that game ended up, losing for me. I lost that one, but it was still an awesome experience. And to see how close I came to snatching it away from my opponent who thought they had won very early on was exciting. And then I think if I had more reps, I could have actually taken that game. So for me, I really like it. If you're looking for a challenge that doesn't involve holding as many objectives as you probably would have in the past, right? Like, I mean, excess of avidity and dominant position are still really good for this warband. It'll tilt you in that direction. There are ways in which you can score and play that aren't necessarily holding three, at least, right? Holding two is maybe enough and kind of leans to that Harrow's play style, which I think you've been also enjoying. Do you see similarities between the two warbands in that sense?
Yeah, I do. I think the biggest thing that they have in common is going to be the double dominant position where you really need to control who's holding more objectives. They also, I would say are a little bit similar in that they do need to interact with the enemy to inspire. Harrows are a little bit different in that they have to do it individually. I think they both prefer to be in the defensive position where they can score passively. The enemy has to come to them and then they can sort of play on their terms and then power up. So I think they're both similar in that respect. I think the difference probably is that I think Vasilic, when he's fully powered up, has maybe a little bit more versatility because of his ranged attack. If he can get in the middle of something and, you know, attacking different things, that can be pretty devastating. I'm not sure if this warband is easier to kill than Lady Harrows. It's probably similar. Sometimes Lady Harrows just refuse to, you know, fail a defense roll, but sometimes you'll also lose like two of them in the first round. Glissette is actually harder to kill. So that kind of have that in common.
I feel like that's just the game now.
Yeah.
We talked about this the other day where it's just like dice just seem more random than they ever have. And so
we don't have a lot of accuracy right now, I think is part of it.
Yeah.
So like a lot of the rolls truly are like a 50-50. So that's why I think that's what's going on. But I've also just played, for some reason, that some of the games I've played recently have been pretty silly when it comes to dice. Like everything will crit for one player or you know, they'll just completely miss.
Yeah, that happened with us three times in a row. Where the dice went your way twice and they went my way once. And
yeah.
You know, and I also think there's other contributing factors to it. There's, you know, I think defense stats overall are just getting better.
Yeah, that's possible.
And then, you know, we have a lot of good upgrades right now.
Right. A lot of health upgrades too.
Yeah. Like, you know, great fortitude, deserve confidence. You can do it through the gauntlets as well. So lots of accessibility there. And then, you know, tight defense and survival instincts are still great cards. And guard is, I think ever since guard has come into the picture, it's just been harder to kill things. Or maybe it's more equal where the attacker doesn't necessarily have as much as an advantage as perhaps they should initially. So, or at least they did. So it's really interesting. I think going back to the warband, I like them and I look forward to playing them. And I'm a big, I think we love chaos in general, both of us. I mean, we've named our podcast after a chaotic warband. And so, you know, I'm really excited for Khagra's Ravagers who are on the horizon.
Yeah.
The roadmap mentions January. So I think we're going to get a lot of chaos in our lives. And I've also been revisiting old warbands. You know, I think one of our patrons shared a really cool Godsworn Hunt deck and I really liked it. And so I've been messing around with it myself. Haven't played any games yet, but you know, maybe I can win a trophy before Tom Bond.
Ooh.
That was a joke, Tom. I love you.
And one of the cool things that I wanted to mention, we were talking about deserve confidence. I really like how Hadzu gets around that when he can just push you right off, and same with guard too. So that's another cool thing that I think this warband can offer. And it really helps you with the, it makes him particularly good at stopping you from holding more objectives too. I had I had my Lady Harrow pulled off of an objective today, and I think it may have cost me the game. So, and I had deserved confidence. So it's like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just so cool. And I guess this maybe goes without saying, but you know, I'd be remiss if we didn't mention it was, you know, you have some built in quarry synergy.
Yeah.
I think Ahead of the Hunt is one have a surviving quarry. Boom.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of that one.
Yeah. You just exist and score glory. And that's really cool because, you know, for a while now we've seen quarry become almost a boon rather than perhaps a disadvantage in that at least it was framed that way in some of the promotional and marketing material during Beastgrave. And so we have yet to see any negative consequences truly from being a quarry other than some certain interactions with upgrades. So I think just, you know, live it up and score that glory while you can.
Yeah. I think Ahead of the Hunt's great. If we get any more quarry interaction cards in the future, I think you always have to think about this warband. Any sort of benefit for being a quarry, this warband gets to do right away. So interestingly, I don't think they're that good at absolute stillness because I don't know if /likes keeping still. But, you know, anything else like that, I think this is the warband you think about.
Agreed. So as you can tell, we both have a lot of good things to say about the Dread Pageant. I don't know if Slaanesh has gotten to us and we're both sick individuals. But, you know, we like it. And I think if you are been on the fence about buying this set or this warband or giving them a try, I think we both highly encourage that you do. Not only does it help keep the game going, but they're just a lot of fun. And I think you're going to have a lot of fun playing with your friends online and eventually, hopefully soon, in person as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's going to be it for this episode. If you're a Patreon supporter, be sure to stick around for the end phase where we're going to talk about when to throw away your first objective hand. Once again, thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to join our current patrons, you can at patreon.com/pathtoglory. You can find all of our blog content at pathtoglorypodcast.com. If you have any feedback, questions, or comments, please let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Discord at Path to Glory Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. As always, thanks for listening, and we wish you the best of luck on your Path to Glory.
So I thought about a lot of witty comments for this, and I felt like they were all inappropriate because of Slaanesh. So I'll just leave you with this. Pain does equal pleasure.